Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Hello, KGAB AM 650 and KFEZ FM in Colorado Springs and Cheyenne and Montana, Nebraska, Utah, Wyoming, and Colorado. Welcome, listeners. Got a treat for you today. A gentleman by the name of Brian Sussman. He was a meteorologist on a major network for 20 years. He's won Emmys for science reporting. And he's currently a talk show host, believe it or not, in Nancy Pelosi's district and top-rated morning talk show host. How do you like that? And his specialty, as you may have gathered due to his background, is kind of the atmosphere, you know, greenhouse gases, what everybody runs around and talks about being the plight of the planet and the eventual doom of mankind, all, in my opinion, and I think you'll find out in Brian's also, a guise for more control of your life, more control of this economy, and in the end, a change in your value system and the value systems of your children. Brian, welcome to the show.
Reed, excellent to speak with you, and it's just a pleasure to speak to your audience.
Yeah, well, that's great. We love having you. We particularly love having you from San Francisco. I just love the irony of that.
Let me tell you something. You know, you think about it. I've got Nancy Pelosi as my representative. I've got Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein as my senators, and we don't even need to talk about my governor right now, Governor Moonbeam. So the fact that I have an opportunity to speak the truth in their particular venue is just an awesome opportunity.
And not only that, you have President Obama as your president, so you're batting 1,000.
Oh, yeah, man. We're batting 1,000, and we're watching it all go to hell in a handbasket, quite frankly. But we'll be able to get into that during this interview, I'm sure.
I mean, aren't you guys – isn't the big dispute in San Francisco right now not the end of the earth, but whether or not people can walk around naked?
Yeah, we usually have issues like that. In this particular case, I'm finding it amazing. They're actually thinking of banning public nudity. But while that's a story in San Francisco, there's another story in San Francisco, and that is now if you get on the public health care system in the city of San Francisco, that would be health care for free, the city will actually pay for your sex change operation. Oh, and then there's one more. We started cap and trade just last week, so we're number one in San Francisco in the Bay Area, baby. We're just pushing all the envelopes.
Well, you know, it's meeting great net in-migration to the Rockies and Texas, so we all thank you.
Yeah, anyway, that is true. By the way, we have a huge net migration out of the state, highest state sales tax in the nation, highest state income tax. I mean, we're moving people out.
Worst state budget deficit, largest state overall debt, and on and on and on. You know, your book, Echo Tyranny, How the Left's Green Agenda Will Dismantle America, is something that I think everybody should read. It's some great background, not just on the science, folks. I think you'll gain a much greater understanding of what's going on in the scientific community, and there's been a lot of hoopla and a lot of smoke screens and even fudging of numbers, as we're going to talk about, from the great British scientists who led the charge on global warming. But I think it's going to give you a background on politics, the politics of global warming and the money of global warming. You know, on my past shows, remember, it's www.threadswest, I'm talking about my books, on the rightsideradio.com, go there. They're all segregated for you now. We've done some great work on the site. You can go right to Agenda 21, environmental issues, et cetera, listen to the shows on that. But Brian ties the two together, I think, in a unique way. If you want to see more of Brian's work or know more about him, you can go to Brian Sussman, that's SUSSMAN.com. That's BrianSussman.com. From there, you can get to any of his other websites, find the book, et cetera, et cetera. I recommend you do it. So without further ado, Brian, tell the audience what is really a greenhouse gas and what the left tries to say a greenhouse gas is.
Well, this is an amazing story because, first of all, we need a greenhouse effect in order to have a habitable atmosphere for which human life can exist. So the greenhouse gases retain heat on this planet for a purpose. Otherwise, you know, we'd have one half of the Earth burning up every day, and the other half would be ice cold, just kind of like the moon. But we have these greenhouse gases within this atmosphere that retain enough heat for us to be able to live, and not just live, but thrive. Well, you know, one of the greenhouse gases is carbon dioxide. It's a really, it's an essential gas for life, obviously. Without it, we can't live. But it's a minor gas within the overall atmosphere. It's 38 one-thousandths of 1% of all the atmospheric gases. So I know people are listening, they're going about their day. Let me just repeat that. Carbon dioxide is 38 one-thousandths of 1% of all the gases in the atmosphere. That's it. And again, if you were to determine how much of that 38 thousandths of 1% is contributed by human beings through everything from farming to cement making to logging to burning of fossil fuels, it's 3%. So 3% of 38 thousandths of 1%. That's a number so small, I can't even begin to imagine it. That's all the contribution we have in terms of atmospheric carbon dioxide. Now, Reed, listen, I'm preaching to the choir here because you've read the book and you're really on top of all this stuff, and this is what you do on a regular basis. But here's the deal, folks. Because we've done such an outstanding job cleaning up other air pollutants here in the United States, we've done a great job of cleaning up our atmosphere. The left had to come up with a new pollutant when you couldn't touch, taste, see, or smell carbon dioxide. And they did it.
A new lever.
They had to find a new lever. Exactly. Because everything else wasn't working. We were cleaning up the skies, and we've done a great job of that. So, I mean, these tricksters said, okay, carbon dioxide, it's a greenhouse gas. Nobody can see it, taste it, touch it, or smell it. Aha, let's run with it. And so this is the game that they've been playing starting in the 70s. It picked up steam in the 80s. In the 90s, people started listening to their message. And now, you know, carbon dioxide is suddenly a pollutant. It's a fertilizer. It's a fertilizer, not a pollutant.
Well, not only that, it's kind of key to the health of the entire vegetative community on the planet Earth because they have to have carbon dioxide to survive. And last time I checked, it made up a substantial portion of our bodies.
Yeah, it's true. It's really true. We are carbon beings.
So
life
so guess,
is all about
the
carbon.
The real message here is to get rid of pollution, get rid of humans.
Well, you know, that's interesting, and it's
yes,
and,
exactly.
And on the one hand, we laugh, but listen, this is the goal. The entire goal of the hardcore environmentalists is to reduce the population on planet Earth, and they believe, if you talk to the hardcore environmentalists, and I talk about some of them in detail in Eco-Tyranny. These are people who, if you ask them, okay, what's the number? We got 7 billion now. You tell me, big shot, what's the number? You ply these people with a couple of drinks or, you know, let them smoke a little dope and they'll start talking freely. And they believe that, you know, maybe a couple hundred million people,
mm-hmm.
that's all we really need, just a couple hundred million.
Sure, and doesn't this tie in, Brian? I mean, once again, on the political side, doesn't this tie into the whole theory of eugenics, the IPAP board and Obamacare? The, shall we say, abandonment of the old and redirection of resources, healthcare resources, to the young and more productive, and birth control and abortion. I mean, isn't it all kind of tied into one really ugly nucleus of extreme green left?
Sure. And, you know, Reed, this is what I did. Just to give a little further background, in 2010, I wrote the book Climategate. A veteran meteorologist exposes the global warming scam. I wanted to be another voice.
Which is a great book, audience, by the way. I mean, a great primer for his latest one.
Yes, and thank you for that. And so I wanted to be just another voice out there because I did not want my Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi to pass that to pass cap and trade. I did not want that.
Well, that's okay.
And so
if she passes it, we can read it and see what's in it.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you listen, you know, that was the scary thing about the Affordable Health Care Act with this cap-and-trade bill. My gosh, you know, you started digging into the details of that. It was just frightening, everything from the Green Goon Squad, as I like to call it, to the total all-out proliferation of the smart meter, and we can talk more about that. But I wanted to be a voice just to try stop my congresswoman from passing cap and trade. So, okay, we had a victory there. But as I was researching ClimateGate, it became apparent to me the entire environmental movement is based on a scam. So I wanted to do some research. Where did this whole movement begin? And it's interesting because the first guy to ever talk about humans destroying the planet and capitalism adding to the destruction of the planet was Karl Marx. He wrote about that extensively. And so I started looking at his writings and then started following the dots to connecting the dots with all of his various disciples. Karl Marx wrote a plan to save the earth from capitalism. And the first person to implement that plan as a national leader was Vladimir Lenin, who was a devout Marx disciple. Vladimir Lenin was as green as anyone could imagine. You read some of his papers called On Forests and On Land and On Hunting. I mean, this guy, he could sit down with anybody from Greenpeace or the Sierra Club today, and they would be absolute compatriots. They're all on the same page.
Yeah, Brian, let me interject for just a moment because I want to tie a big loop for the audience.
Yes.
Audience, if you go to www.ontherightsideradio.com and you go into the environmental section, Agenda 21, et cetera, and you also go into Obama's czars, you will find some shows over the last year where I talk about, and I've had national guests on talk about, including Paul Kenger, who wrote The Communist, where, number one, Barack Obama's purported father and his mother met in a Russian studies class translating Lenin. Number two, Valerie Jarrett, Barack Obama, and David Axelrod were all mentored by Frank Marshall Davis, who was the most devoted disciple and spokesperson for the Communist Party in America from 1929 to 1979, a devoted Marx, Karl Marx disciple. If you don't think this all ties in, folks, it certainly all ties in. Excuse me. I wanted to get that out, Brian.
I'm glad you did. That is fascinating, and people need to realize what you just said is not pie-in-the-sky made-up stuff. This is all real, folks. So you look at Karl Marx talking about capitalism killing the environment, too many people killing the environment. And Karl Marx also, by the way, wrote extensively about this, something that all the mainstream environmentalists believe today. They believe that the human being is really no different than the redwood tree or the banana slug. I mean, we're all just made up of material, atoms and molecules. The only difference between us and the tree and the snail or the snake or whatever it may be is that our atoms and molecules are just arranged differently. But we're no more special. We may be more complex, but, you know, basically we're all the same. That's what the committed environmentalist truly, truly believes. Well, Karl Marx, you know, took it a step further, and this is what the environmentalists hold on to this day. You know, we're not really all the same. I mean, even though we're all the same, we need to discriminate against one species, and that would be humans, because humans are the one species that can destroy the planet. So the entire environmental movement is, you know, we're all the same, but humans are to be discriminated against because they can destroy this place. That's how all these environmentalists, Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin, believed the same thing. Vladimir Lenin didn't believe anybody should make a profit off of a natural resource. He learned that from Karl Marx. He believed that the natural resources, again, they're the same as humans in terms of their, you know, makeup, just material, atoms and molecules. He kept those natural resources from his people in Russia. And Vladimir Lenin's plan was essentially adopted by the United Nations, and now we're running with it helter-skelter. I mean, folks, think about this.
And Karl Marx's
Our federal government owns or manages.
At the United Nations level, they call it Agenda 21, correct?
Absolutely. Rolled out in 1992, put together by a character named Maurice Strong. You think Obama's resume is mysterious, folks. Maurice Strong's resume is twice that, but this is a guy that created the entire environmental program for the United Nations and rolled out the agenda for the 21st century at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, where a guy by the name of Al Gore, by the way, was heralded as a rock star back then. But I digress. You know, the problem is our federal government owns or manages, and your audience knows this because you guys are right there in the heart of it.
That's right.
700 million acres of federal land. And this is some of the most prime land when it comes to gas, oil, coal, minerals, water. And our government is withholding those resources from us, just the way Vladimir Lenin did with his people in Russia, and just the way Marx prescribed it to be in so many of his writings.
And the real travesty is that those lands were expressly set aside by previous generations of Americans because of their resources to be used by this generation.
Yes, and see, our founders, the founders of America, before the Articles of Confederation, the founders got together and said, okay, what are we going to do with all this land? You got all this land to the west. What are we going to do with it? And everyone decided, okay, the federal government is only going to have enough land for military bases and just enough to have a central limited government. That's all. We're not going to own land. We're not going to manage land. We'll leave that up to the states. So all that land to the west, that was going to be given to individuals, you know, as you know, we had the sustenance farms, et cetera, and it would be given to the states, and then the states could decide what to do with it. But as I write in Eco-Tyranny, this is a slippery slope that began first by federalizing the hot springs in Arkansas, and then it moved to some of the Indian dwellings in the southwestern United States, then it went to Yosemite, and we just started nationalizing all these areas, and pretty soon the federal government's amassed 700 million acres of land. Barack Obama has added to that greatly during his presidency. I've got a secret document I was able to...
And he plans 13 million additional acres in his second term under the Heritage Act.
Under the Heritage Act, and there was the document that I placed in the back of my book that was secret no more, but it was secret at the time, this Department of Interior document with scribbles from some mastermind that I, again, we put all this in the form of a PDF in the back of the book. There's another 100 million acres on tap that they want to federalize. And again, this is prime real estate with resources that the country needs.
Yes, needs desperately, in fact. Needs for its economy, needs for its people, and needs for its, shall we say, position within the world. All of which,
yes.
Well, all of which, folks, is antithesis to the thinking of the current administration. You heard Denise D'Souza talk about what Obama's America really is in Obama's mind, from Dreams of My Father. You know, mm-hmm. He wants a scaled-back America. He wants an America that is merely another seat at the big table of nations. Redistribution doesn't mean just from you to your neighbor. It means from America to the rest of the world, because the middle class in America, in Barack Obama and his minions' minds, is the elite of the world. And you need to give something back, folks. And one of the things that you can give back is your resources. And your resources means money, which you're doing right now. And in the end, it will mean the resources that the federal government is withholding from you. Go ahead, Brian.
That's exactly right. And again, this elite status that you just described, you see, Marx was the one who really articulated that the best. This comes from his laws of matter. And I break these down quite simply in Eco-Tyranny. And I talked about them a bit in Climate Gate as well, but this is really important. If you want to get into the mind of these leftists that are in our universities and they're teaching at the various colleges, and now they're all over government. You see, what they believe is that because of evolution, occasionally there are people that are just randomly spit out of their mother's womb with a better brain than others. And those people with the better brain have some sort of responsibility to the planet to rule over those of us with the lesser brain, because as Marx articulated so well, those of us with the lesser brain, left to our own devices, will kill one another and destroy the planet. So that's why we need heavy-handed regulation. We need lots of laws. See, Barack Obama and his ilk in the West Wing, and again, through all of our states, we've got these people making it into positions of leadership power. They all believe the same thing. You know, some of us are just a little better. We're a little smarter. Our minds are a little better trained. We've got to take care of all those peons out there because they really don't know what the heck they're talking about. So that's it. It's that elite caste that you just described, Reed.
Yeah, and you know, it's frustrating because they are very, very good at diverting attention, right? I mean, this is really a big guise to wrest more power and place it in the hands of the elite to accomplish all these lofty goals that you've been expressing. In the meantime, tell us a little bit about, Brian, tell us a little bit about what energy means to America. I mean, kind of boil it down for the audience. I mean, everybody knows they need to heat their house and they need to put fuel in their car, and we saw the examples back in Sandy with rationing, all that kind of stuff. But
sure.
Tell us what it means to America as a power, in terms of the quality of life of its citizens and in terms of our economy.
Energy has always been equated with health, and it's also been equated with freedom. And it's also been equated with enterprise and commerce. So, you know, I mean, from the earliest stories of man, I mean, we wanted a nice warm fire to keep our body warm and then to cook our food, etc. That's energy. We've always wanted that. And now you have a government who wants to control our usage of energy more than ever with this silly notion that carbon dioxide is going to destroy the planet, therefore we need to monitor our personal carbon footprint. So, you know, if they control the amount of energy we're able to use, they have more control over our lives. But then in terms of the energy, look at the commerce. Look at the jobs that are created from energy. In Eco-Tyranny, I talk about the numbers in terms of the millions of people who are employed from the fossil fuel industry.
9.2 million this year.
Yeah. And look what Obama's doing just with the coal industry alone. Do people realize, I mean, we've got some of the best coal fields in the world. And by the way, there are clean type, you know, some coal is cleaner than other to burn. But even for the coal that's dirty to burn, we have developed wonderful technologies in the United States to clean this stuff up as it's burned at the various power plants. But Reed, here's the number people need to remember. When Barack Obama came into office, there were 500 coal-burning power plants in America. We have lost, because of his EPA, we have lost 111 of those just in the last almost 4 years alone. 111 coal. That's not only is that jobs, but that's a cheap and abundant source of energy. So he's doing this with the coal. Now, we know all about natural gas. We are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. We've got so much natural gas in this country. And now they're going after this process known as fracking. You listen to the mainstream media, Reed, and you know this because you're in fracking country. You listen to mainstream media, and they make it sound as if fracking is this new experimental technology we're just trying for the first time. We've been fracking for 50 years. We've fracked tens of thousands of times. And in all of the EPA's research, they can only find two instances where fracking may have, underscore the words, may have tarnished groundwater sources. And even then, those studies look pretty darn shaky. So he's going after natural gas. And all this nonsense about what he's doing with the oil industry, opening up 38 million acres in the Gulf, that's all a ruse as well. Those 38 million acres had been proposed to be released under the Bush administration, but because of environmental concerns, there needed to be more studies. All of this is a lie. He hates fossil fuels because, quite frankly, in my opinion, he hates the United States of America the way it is. He wants to change it.
You know, you and I could not agree more. And the key resource to control is energy, because from energy flows everything else, folks. It flows your food, your heat, your fuel. It flows your economy. It flows your job. It powers the lights of your office where you get your paycheck. If you control energy and you control somebody's health, you control them. Understand
yes.
that.
You're exactly right. You get their health and you get their energy. Now you have them. And that's exactly what they're trying to do to us right now. I look at it here in California. You know, these idiots in Sacramento, led by, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was a terrible governor, by the way. He doubled down on his. I love him in the movies. Let me tell you something. I love this guy in the movies. He was an awful governor. He doubled down on his stupidity by signing this bill that allowed cap and trade to begin in California. The trading began last week. Now we're going to go full bore with it in January, and it is guaranteed. Everyone acknowledges this. The price of energy will go up across the board. The price of cement's going to go up. The price of gasoline's going to go up. They admit this, but they feel because the price is going to go up, the rest of us are going to use less. So that's the whole game plan. We'll force the price of energy up, and we'll make them pay, and they're going to use less. They're controlling us.
You know, here's the funny unintended consequence of that, is that as the price has gone up, companies, fossil fuel companies, have invested more and more technology because it pays off. They've been able to produce more and more. So, you know, they're going to have to get their hands around that, too. In terms of California, just to kind of acquaint the audience with the difference in, should we say, outlook toward energy, how many jobs has California created in the last 4 years in the energy sector? Would you happen to know?
Oh, my gosh. It's just, you know, people
it's under 20,000. And folks, you know how many jobs Texas has created in the last year? The last year? 200,000. You've all heard stories about the Dakotas. 3.2% unemployment rate. That's basically, you know, the only people who aren't working are the people who aren't breathing. Okay? There's not a place to live. Values, real estate bust? No, there's no real estate bust. There's no real estate to buy. I mean, this is all founded from energy. With 9.2 million people working in the energy sector and another 2 million that could be employed over the next 5 to 7 years if we let ourselves go, you know, let my people go. Anybody who stands in the way of something like this, including the Keystone Pipeline, which I think is a glaring example, is somebody, this is not a mistake. This is not incompetence. This is intentional. The question becomes, and that's what we're talking with Brian about, is why it's intentional and what the effect might be, what types of things we might see coming from this government to try and tamp down on this surge in American energy superiority, which is being accomplished all on private lands, okay, and despite the administration, when we come back after this break. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne, and the Town Square Network serving the Intermountain West, and KFEZ serving Colorado and New Mexico. We'll be right back with Brian Sussman.
Land for love and money. Two sides of the same coin. A home of one's own with a front yard to mow and a backyard for the kids to play and maybe to grow a few vegetables. An acre by the lake to pitch a tent and go fishing, or a little cottage by the ocean. Having land of our own is something we dream about, save for. Land tugs at our hearts, yet land is also synonymous with nitty-gritty financial issues, an opportunity for financial success or failure. The three volumes of Land for Love and Money are written for those drawn to land purchase, ownership, management, enjoyment, and preservation in good times and bad. Hear stories of lessons learned, great success, and abject failures. Rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal's long-standing devotion to wild and remote places and his extensive $1.5 billion personal experience with land on two continents uniquely qualify him to write this book, a bestseller already. Land for Love and Money is available at landforloveandmoney.com, Barnes & Noble, Hastings, Amazon, and fine bookstores everywhere.
We're back. It's On the Right Side, Reed Lance Rosenthal and Brian Sussman, our special guest and the author of Eco Tyranny, How the Left's Green Agenda Will Dismantle America, and Climate Gate. They're both great books, folks. BrianSussman.com, that's SUSSMAN.com. If you want to know more about what's going on, not only with the science of this global warming nonsense, but the political effect and the intended political effect, I really recommend you read these books and visit his website. So, Brian, when we left, we were going to talk about kind of the effect, shall we say, on what do you think that these people are going to try and do since there's unintended consequences, i.e. fossil fuels are booming on private lands, no thanks to government regulations, which are trying to shut them down, because as they've raise the price, not being market-driven people, not understanding markets, they forgot that they've created more incentive to produce more and come up with new technology. What are they going to do to shut this down? What do we need to be looking for?
Well, the problem is, see, Paul Ehrlich, who is an esteemed professor at Stanford University, and he was also one of the founders of the first Earth Day, and he was also a guy who wrote a wildly popular book in the 1960s called The Population Bomb. This is a guy who's a devout environmentalist with a PhD, and he believes there are too many people on the planet. People are the problem. He said something many years ago, giving the American people a cheap and abundant source of energy is like giving an idiot child a machine gun. Okay, so these people look at energy and our use of energy as being bad because it spurs capitalism, it buoys lifestyles, and it creates commerce. And the environmentalists don't like any of that because they see all of that as wrecking the planet. So what they're trying to do is limit the amount of energy that's available to us. And, you know, if it takes 10 years or if it takes 50 years, they're very patient about this. They always are.
That's why they're called progressives.
And you know what? It's because they're progressive in this sense. They're willing to take an inch or a foot or a yard at a time, fully knowing that if you give them that amount, they're going to go for it on the long haul. You know, while we'll walk away from the bargaining table saying, all right, we got a victory here. They only got this much. No. They're saying, yeah, we only got this much this time, but next time, we'll take it to the cleaners. And that's just what they're doing in the United States of America. So, you know, when I'm looking at what's happening on private lands with our fossil fuel exploration, it's exciting. And this is everything the founders wanted. The founders knew that people with resources in their own property would use that properly because it's their property. And, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. They would be able to make a lot of people wealthy and improve a lot of lives with those resources, whereas the federal government sitting on resources does just that. They sit on them and they lock them up for a purpose. So I would say the EPA under Obama is going to be hell-bent for leather to stop as much natural gas drilling and exploration as possible in the name of fracking. They're going to play this card and they're going to play it hard. And if anything, if nothing else, they'll cause the price of natural gas to rise incrementally. I don't believe any of this bull about Obama opening up oil lands for exploration. The only thing that he's offered to open up thus far was stuff that was already on the books during the Bush administration. He's tried putting it off as long as he can. He hates big oil. Now, does he hate oil? Well, you know something? This is interesting, Reed. The environmentalists don't necessarily hate oil or any of the fossil fuels per se. They just don't like it when anybody makes a profit off them, especially. And I say that because isn't it interesting? With Brazil and Mexico, Obama goes overseas, used the U.S. Import-Export Bank to give them billions of dollars for exploration for oil production. And
funded
he even told
stimulus.
Brazil.
Funded by the stimulus.
Yeah, funded by the stimulus through the U.S. Import-Export Bank. And then he goes to Brazil and says, hey, listen, when you guys are ready, we'll be your biggest customer. What is it about Brazil's oil and Mexico's oil that's different about U.S. oil? Two things. One, they're state-run. There's no profits. All the profits go back to the people in the form of big government and welfare programs. The other part of the equation is, see, he sees this as redistribution.
Exactly.
The more he can get us to be dependent on OPEC, the better it is because we're funneling our money to those nations. And can I just tell you something, folks? Every time you buy a drop of, for example, Saudi oil, or for that matter, I'm just going to say it, Iraqi oil or Iranian oil, do you realize that a certain percentage of that money goes to their various Islamic charities? And if you want to know why all these mosques are being built all around the United States, it's from that oil money that's been given to Saudi Arabia. That's what they're using to fund all these mosques in this country. But
and
Obama
Brian,
likes that.
You,
what, so that's what, redistribution.
Yeah, absolutely, it's redistribution. It's redistribution from America, the elite, the 1% of the world. Is America in total in Barack Obama's mind. And we need to redistribute as a country to others, just as the 1% here, or the 2%, or the 10% need to redistribute to the other 50%. But
yeah.
there are certain gas stations out there which carry exclusively Middle East oil. Why don't you tell the folks the brand names? And folks, you should avoid them.
Well, are you talking about the one that's centered in my backyard?
Exactly.
And, you know, it's Chevron is known for using a large amount of Saudi oil, and it's really a shame. You know, I've been invested in some wonderful oil companies in your neck of the woods, just, you know, small companies that are all American, and I want to support those best I can. But it should irk us, folks. This is a part of the redistribution plan under Barack Obama. And I'm sure if he could figure out a way for us to import natural gas from the OPEC nations, he would do that as well. It's just not quite so easy to transport.
Right, and it also brings us to another point. You know, there's a huge demand for United States coal. Coal is actually being exported. It would be a tremendous assist as would liquefied natural gas, in terms of our terrible balance of trade problem.
Oh yeah.
Okay, but
absolutely.
You know, instead of building ports to export natural gas, which we are swimming in, and coal, which, as you noted, power plants are getting shut down. We have less use for coal here. Let's sell it to the rest of the world. Oh, no, no, no. Let me ask a question. This whole thing is based on global warming. I put that in quotes.
Right.
You know, you have some great facts and figures on the actual, quote-unquote, global warming over a long period of time. Tell the audience about that.
Yeah, see, this is the biggest sham going. You know, if you want consensus, because Al Gore is always telling us about, oh, we have consensus. All these scientists say there's global warming and it's going to destroy the planet unless stopped. You want consensus amongst people who don't believe in man-caused global warming? Just go to the people that study the sun, solar physicists. They're all in agreement. These are brainiacs. They study the sun, for crying out loud. They all agree that there's one thing that drives temperature change on the planet. It's the sun, not human beings. Just as an aside, another group that has never believed in man-caused global warming, and they certainly don't believe there's any connection between man-caused global warming or just global warming at all and, say, hurricanes, those are the guys at the National Hurricane Center. They study and forecast the biggest storms on Earth. That's the biggest bunch of global warming skeptics you'd ever meet in your life. But let's get back to the temperature for just a second. So since 1850, when the Industrial Revolution was really ramping up and we came out of this thing called the Little Ice Age, the planet started to warm up. Planet warmed up, well, since 1850, 1.2 degrees Celsius. 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit, 0.7 degrees Celsius. So 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit, that's it. 160 years, 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, Reed, here's the statistic. And I can break that 160 years down 100 different ways to Sunday, but I'll just give you this one statistic that drives the left crazy. And it's absolutely true. 88% of the warming that has occurred since 1850 occurred before 1940. 88% of it occurred before 1940. The 1930s were the hottest decade on record. 22 of our now 50 states recorded their all-time high temperatures during the 1930s.
Yeah, I'm sure folks have heard about the Dust Bowl. That's where it came
absolutely
from.
Dust Bowl. We had just unbelievably high temperatures. We've never seen anything like that since. So for them to tell you this is the hottest weather ever, it's bull. Most of the warming that has occurred since 1850, the lion's share occurred before 1940. You need to remember that. Then the other part of this is, there has been no warming whatsoever since 1998, and some would criticize me and say, Brian, it's actually been since 1994. Okay, either way, 1994, 1998, there has been no warming, and in fact, over the last 18 months, there's been a slight downturn in temperature. So those are the facts, folks. If you're going to have global warming, you better have global warming, and we don't have any.
I happen to agree. Listen, there was a quote-unquote university / think tank. It was centered in Britain, and they were supposedly compiling, and they were the nucleus of, the nexus of, all these global warming alarmist statistics. And wasn't there a huge fraud involving these liars over the last 3 or 4 years?
Absolutely. In fact, that we call this scandal the ClimateGate email scandal, and that's how I came across the name of my first book, ClimateGate. Because what happened, there's this esteemed, it's more than just a think tank. They actually are in charge of making the forecast for the global temperature. It's called the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia University in the UK. And some of the brightest minds from all over the world participate in this atmospheric think tank. And, you know, this is what I've contended this forever, Reed, and that is you look at the people pushing global warming who are atmospheric scientists. They're all crazy left-of-center individuals. I mean, their politics are so far to the left. They would look at Marx and say, wow, he has some really neat ideas, man. We need to try to do it right. As opposed to a guy like me, a guy like you, you know, I look at Madison and I say, you know, Madison had the great ideas. That's what we need to get back to. But these guys are all left-to-center thinkers, and they're willing to bastardize the scientific method in order to put forward a scare that's going to drive people away from a free market capitalistic type system into a socialistic system. That's what they want to do. They're willing to bastardize the science. And they come up with all this research and they concoct all these studies to say, look at it, it's mankind's burning of fossil fuels, capitalism's ruining the planet, global warming is real, and they pretty much sound like Karl Marx.
Yeah, but so, you know, give the folks some specific examples, because they're startling what
good.
These guys did
yes.
to try and fudge the numbers.
Well, it's amazing. This is pretty cool stuff. Somebody, we don't know who did this. I contend it was an inside job. Somebody got into all these emails from the Climate Research Unit, and they posted them on a server in Russia and broadcast them to the world. And these emails, there were redactions in the emails, so we couldn't see a lot of the private information, which tells me it was an inside job. But these emails, I mean, there were thousands of these emails proving that these characters were talking to one another, saying, listen, you know, we need to massage the date on this. You know, there was that little ice age. My gosh, we need to get rid of that from the record. The medieval warming period between 950 and 1450, when it was 2 degrees warmer than today. Listen, is there a way we can tamp that down? You know, this spike in the temperature graph that Al Gore likes to use. We really need to highlight that. And then they would. I mean, this is all in the emails. Just thousands of these emails where it proves that they're manipulating data and twisting the scientific method. And then it gets personal. They talk about guys like me. They didn't use me by name, but they used some of my colleagues, saying, listen, we need to make sure that guy's blackballed from this particular society. We need to make sure that this guy's papers are never published in Nature magazine again. It got personal. So there was a total cover-up, there was a total scam, a total manipulation of the data. And so now, you know, there's a public uproar over this, because people are reading the emails and it became clear to anyone this is what was going on. So here's how they decided to handle it. We'll handle it. We're going to have an investigation. It's an internal investigation. You know, a couple wrists were slapped. That was the end of the deal.
You mean,
and life's
like
gone off
Benghazi?
These people. Yeah, it's kind of your old internal, let's cover up whatever we need to cover up to make the big guy look as good as possible. So in this particular case, the guy named Phil Jones, who was at the center of this email scandal, he runs the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia. He was exonerated. But it's interesting, you know, Phil Jones, he's had a couple slips of late. He's a guy who will corroborate what I just said a moment ago. There hasn't been no global warming since 1998. Phil Jones has actually said that now. He's actually admitted there's been no global warming since 1998. So this cast of characters was completely outed, and yet it's interesting, Reed, because the rest of the media just decided they would turn their head to those emails as if
no
they never existed.
No coverage at all.
None.
In fact, you know, I think your book is one of the better ones in exposing that. And folks, if you think that this is just Brian and Reed kind of beating the right-hand side of our chests here, go online. Google up that institute, Google up the email scam, read it for yourself. You can read the actual emails online. This is the gospel truth, okay? This is what is determining the future of your children's children. Now, I don't know about you, but it really pisses me off.
Yeah, because it's, listen, Reed, you're a guy. Your listeners are people. I'm a guy. We all want the truth. That's it. The unvarnished truth. I will follow the truth wherever it leads me. And when you see these people taking science and just manipulating real data, it's very troublesome. And Reed, that's what's going on. I'm very critical of a guy who runs who is in charge of the Earth's temperature. He works for NASA. His name's Jim Hansen. This is a guy, in order to try and make it look warmer in these last, 20 years, he's the one who's put all the thermometers all over the planet to take all the temperature readings. He's the guy who says, no, satellite data to read temperatures all over the planet. We don't want satellite data. That's too perfect. I want thermometers. And to make it look warmer, he's actually taken out hundreds of thermometers that have been used for decades from Canada, Siberia, the Andes Mountains, cold locations. He's taken all those out so the temperature of the Earth will automatically skew upward. So now we have a situation where we can't even believe the actual temperatures that they're giving us when they report the global average.
Yeah, from our own government, I might add.
Yes, from our own government. And these are the temperatures that are observed by the world. They're skewing the data. And this guy, Jim Hansen, is as crazy left of center as you could ever imagine.
Talking about crazy left of center, all these folks kind of believe in a global community, a kumbaya
yes.
global government.
Yes.
And, you know, where they have been unsuccessful in getting their twisted data and twisted logic into sovereign states. Tell us a little bit about how they have now turned to the UN and what Agenda 21 is. And by the way, folks, once again, I'm not driving you to the archives, but this stuff is covered in depth. Agenda 21, there's been three shows on it. It has its own little link right there on the front page on therightsideradio.com. You might want to listen to it, some great interviews. And we have an expert on the line with us right now. And, Brian, tell us about Agenda 21.
And Reed, thanks for your reporting on Agenda 21. It's really important. You know, when I talk about the title of the book, Eco-Tyranny, How the Left's Green Agenda Will Dismantle America, the green agenda is Agenda 21. Agenda 21 was rolled out in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit, and this is the UN's agenda for the 21st century. A lot of it has to do with climate change and climate change policy. But other parts of the agenda include things like universal health care is a right.
Yep.
I mean that's there. It's in it. But getting back to the specifics, they talk in Agenda 21 about taxing or putting a price on carbon dioxide. That's where this whole thing really started getting into gear. They talk about green jobs in Agenda 21. I mean, everybody's all about green jobs nowadays. Hey, folks, this is something that was created by the United Nations in 1992, and the goal was green jobs would be union jobs, and they would be the gift that just keeps on giving. Solar, wind, etc. These are labor-intensive opportunities for low-skilled workers to get work. I mean, that's how they look at it. So the green jobs are there. High-speed rail. High-speed rail is a part of Agenda 21. There's this push all over the United States and California. We're going balls to the wall on this thing. And we don't have the money to do it, but we're going to do it anyway. High-speed rail is a part of Agenda 21.
You're awash in surplus.
Yeah. We're so upside down we can't see straight. The smart grid. And therefore, you could start to connect the dots and say the smart meter, et cetera. This is all part of Agenda 21. And again, the whole goal behind the smart meter and the home area network and the smart grid, which was funded by the stimulus and is coming to a neighborhood near you, this is all about controlling the amount of energy that comes into your house. These were all concoctions of the United Nations.
I want to get back to Agenda 21, but just as a quick sidelight, because, you know, most of the people listening to this show, there's 125,000 of you folks out there. Thank you again for that. But, you know, I mean, we kind of view ourselves as the last of the pioneers. Many own land, you know, are scattered up and down the Rocky Mountain states. Our viewpoints coalesce in many areas, perhaps not all. Folks, let Brian tell you about what the smart meter means to your house. Brian.
Yeah, and many of these people have already had the smart meter attached. It replaced that spinning electric meter you used to have on the side of your house. So the smart meter is able to essentially monitor your carbon footprint. It's going to determine how much energy you're using on a minute-by-minute basis. And they tell you, oh, this is going to be a great opportunity for you to save money. No, it's going to end up costing you money because they'll start billing you for the amount of energy you're using during peak periods of operation. But beyond that...
And eventually, they will actually limit the amount of energy you use in your home.
Yes, so the smart meter will be tied into something that Google and Apple and Microsoft are working on called the Home Area Network, which will be attached to every electrical device in your home, and all of this will be hooked up to the smart meter, which will have broadband capability, and all of this also will be attached to your appliances. Anything that says Energy Star on it is ready for the smart grid. These Energy Star appliances, you don't know this, but they're all able to be controlled remotely. They can be controlled outside of your house with the right apparatus, and I'm not making that up. So that's the way it's going to work. But just to give you a little thumbnail sketch of how the smart meter could work, it's July, 105 degrees outside, 2 in the afternoon. You're doing, you know, you've got a load of laundry going, you got the dishwasher going, and you're watching the game on the big screen. There's going to be some bureaucrat that says, wait a second, what is this? You know, we got a little power shortage right now, and look at this joker at this particular address. Okay, first thing we're going to do is take that dishwasher, turn that off, don't let that come on until 7 p.m. A load of laundry, it's 100 degrees outside, turn that off, don't let that device go on until midnight. And he's got the air conditioning down to 72. What an idiot. Turn that air conditioner up to 82 degrees. Big screen TV, huh, that's got to be, well, it's only 40 inches. We'll let it stay on. They'll be able to do all that remotely. That's what the smart grid's all about. Some bureaucrat's going to be limiting the amount of energy you're coming to your house. So, you know, after a period of time, you're going to say, okay, this isn't worth it. You know, I'll get a smaller house. I'll get a smaller screen. I won't get a dishwasher. I'll wash dishes by hand. I mean, they're just using this to manipulate you. Because the environmentalists don't have a plan for more energy in this country. They only have a plan for less. And Reed, in 50 years, we're going to have 100 million more people in the United States of America. We need more energy, not less.
Yes, we agree 100%. Listen, we have a few minutes left. Let's get back to Agenda 21.
Yes, sir.
Tell us quickly how it's infiltrated the federal government, how it's beginning to infiltrate, like, insidious poison pills, state, county, and local governments, what people need to look for, and how the hell they stop it.
This, you know, again, this all, Agenda 21, rolled out in 1992. Al Gore, as vice president, was able to implement this into not just every level of the federal government, especially the Department of Interior and the EPA, but he put together programs so that Agenda 21 would be implemented across the United States in virtually every county planning commission, city planning commission, etc. They're all playing from the same playbook at this point in time. So the tentacles of this agenda are deep, deep, deep within the bowels of the fabric of America at this point in time. And it's showing up in building codes. It's showing up in the way we treat refineries and we will not allow them to expand. It's showing up in the various environmental protection agencies in the various states. So this
and
is what's
warm,
happening,
and
folks.
And in the warm, fuzzy nomenclature of quote-unquote sustainable.
Sustainable development, which just sounds oh so wonderful. But, folks, sustainable development is all about Agenda 21. And sustainable development is all about creating a system whereby there's going to be mass redistribution of wealth off the backs of Americans who would like to use their energy, please.
And so, mass, you know, and mass relocation. Agenda 21, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, is anti-private property.
Absolutely, without question. Well, what was the number one goal of Karl Marx? It was the abolition of private property. Look what the EPA is doing. Look what the Department of Interior is doing in terms of property rights. Then you look at this whole Agenda 21. Agenda 21 believed that there should be no personal property rights. Agenda 21 believes that property owners should be taxed to the point where they don't want to own property any longer. And again, at the end of the day, this is, and I describe this in detail in Eco-Tyranny, getting the people of America to be herded into urban areas where we'll live like rats and stack and pack housing, be beholden to mass transit. Our lives will be revolving around monitoring our carbon footprint like an idiot would maybe look at their navel. All of the ranches, all of the farms in rural America, watch out. There's a plan to make sure you are basically wiped off the map. They want your land. They want to return it, quote-unquote, back to nature. And they want to let that land be given over to only animals and Native Americans. Now, folks,
yeah, you know, the most chilling line in the entire document, which, folks, you can read for yourselves. Once again, we're not making this up. Go to UN.org. You can read the document. You know, it's
absolutely.
28 chapters, four sections. One of them is about social injustice. And the preamble says, I maybe have a few words off, the root of social injustice is the ownership of property by private individuals.
Yep.
That is what's coming our way.
That's right. No, they are. And you have an entire generation that's being raised with this very mindset. You have an entire generation that's being raised with this Occupy mindset, with this the one percenters are evil mindset, this us against them mindset, capitalism is a bad thing mindset. I speak on campuses on a regular basis. In fact, at briansussman.com, there's a little clip of a video from a recent lecture I gave at University of California, Berkeley. These kids, you know, they all come into this school with 4.0 averages, but they're idiots. And they look at you as a capitalist as something that's evil. When I tell them, you know, you can buy my book, they start laughing. You can buy your book? They think me selling a book is a joke. That's how much they hate capitalism. To which I say, well, you want me to give these away? If I give them away, how are we going to have the money to print these things? They think capitalism is, you got an entire generation believing this, Reed. That's why radio programs like yours are so important.
Yes, and yours, I might add, Brian. Listen, it has been terrific. I can't believe it. We're out of time. We're going to have you back, though, because there's a whole bunch of things we did not cover. And I want to get more into Agenda 21 and what people can do to recognize it and stop it at
Good.
The state and local level. I'm afraid the federal level is too far gone. You're just going to have a whole changing of the guard up there. So anyway, thank you very much for being on today, Brian. It's been terrific. Once again, it's Brian Sussman. Brian Sussman, that's two S's, SUSSMAN.com. Get his books, Climate Gate and Echo Tyranny, How the Left's Green Agenda Will Dismantle America. I really recommend it. Brian, thank you.
Reed, thank you very much. Let's do it again, friend.
Absolutely. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, KGAB AM 650 on your dial, Cheyenne, and the Town Square Network serving the Intermountain West, and KFEC FM serving Southern Colorado and New Mexico. And by the way, folks, before I get off, we got a great show coming for you next week, too, which you'll hear about on the promos on your stations. But I just want to let you know that my Land for Love and Money book, which the entire section 3, is about Agenda 21, government interference in your land, and many of the things we were talking about today, won Best Real Estate Book and Best Business Investing Book of the Year from USA Book Awards. So I'm pretty proud of that. And you can go to www.landforloveandmoney.com or Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Anyway, folks, you have a great Saturday. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please go to ontherightsideradio.com. There you can also click to purchase the first two volumes of his number one best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, An American Saga, and Maps of Fate. And now the first volume of his new nonfiction series, Land for Love and Money, is available everywhere, or go to landforloveandmoney.com. That's Land for Love and Money. We'd also like to remind you that if you've missed any shows, you can go to the show archives on Reed's ontherightsideradio.com webpage. We look forward to seeing you again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal, On the Right Side.